I have many memories of decorating trees while watching Browns games over the years.
And
usually, and in more recent times, it has not gone as well as it has in the past. And yesterday was sort of one of those, as the Browns were taking on the Seattle Seahawks. And joining us to talk about that, Browns beat reporter for the Chronicle-Telegram, Scott Petrek, who joins us. Good morning, Scott.
Hey, how are you guys?
Hey, we're doing okay. 30-13. Those numbers seem to keep popping up throughout the season, or something to that effect. Sort of 30-ish points and teen points for, and it's usually the Browns on the losing end. So there's some odd consistency about that, it seems, in my opinion.
It's just the defense tends to give up a bunch of points, and you know, I think the offense, at least the passing game, has been better than people expected. But, you know, you're not 3-11 without having a, you know, bad defense and a bad scoring offense usually. And, you know, I think yesterday's game played out as I expected. Seattle's just a better team. The Browns put up a little bit of a fight, but just weren't good enough.
But we all had hope at the beginning. We get the ball, we kind of march it down. Things seem to be going our way, and everybody in their mind, you know, at some point thinks, whoa, maybe there's something special happening here. But then Seattle gets the ball, and it all changes, that's for sure.
Yeah, I mean, the defense just couldn't stop Seattle. I don't know if they punted twice or once. It took four or five drives before they punted at all. You know, and you're not, and Seattle's offense is playing at such a high level that you need sacks and you need turnovers, and the Browns really couldn't muster either. You know, Russell Wilson in the big plays was able to escape the pressure that the Browns got, and I don't think they turned him over at all. And, you know, when Seattle keeps scoring points, with the defense they have, the issues the Browns have on offense, you know, they weren't going to win a game 35-30. They needed to keep it about 20-17, and that just wasn't going to happen with the way the Browns defense played.
And, of course, then the Browns had an injury in the first series, John Greco. That didn't help, obviously.
No, and, you know, you got to see more of rookie Cam Irving, who the Browns are trying not to play. But when you lose both your starting guards, you know, you only keep seven active offensive linemen usually for a game. So Irving had to go in there, and, you know, he might have played better than he had in the past. I know he gave up a big sack early when the guy ran right by him. He's just not ready to be a starter in this league. He's not physically strong enough, and it'll be up to him to spend the offseason getting stronger and working on his technique so he can contribute next year, because, you know, we don't know what's going to happen, but it looks like there's going to be some turnover on that offensive line. Alex Mack opt out of his contract. The center and right tackle Mitchell Schwartz is in the last year of his contract, so he's going to be a free agent. So the Browns might need Cam Irving to step in next year.
Scott, there is some comfort of, you know, staying put, being part of a line that has Joe Thomas on it. You're familiar with it. You kind of know everything that's going on. But, you know, you look at Alex Mack and Mitchell Schwartz, and while they might not have the best seasons this year, I would tend to think they might want to look at a greener pasture.
Yeah, you know what? It's difficult. The Alex Mack situation, let's start there. It's tough because he would turn down, I think it's $8.5 million a year is what the Browns would pay him, or would need to pay him if he stayed in the contract. So I don't know how big the market will be, you know, once, if he hits the free agent market, but my guess is he'll be able to get more guaranteed money than he has here. But he hasn't played great. I think he's still a top, I don't know, 5, 6, 7 center, which is worth a lot of money in today's NFL. It just seems natural that he'd want to look for another spot, maybe try to finally get on a winner. You know, he's never been with the winner here. And then Mitchell Schwartz, you know, I think it's a matter of, do the Browns want to pay him what someone else will pay him on the open market? And that's going to be a lot of money for a right tackle that I know he takes great criticism around town from the fans, but Pro Football Focus, which analyzes every stat or every snap, they have him as a Pro Bowl right tackle. So he would command some big dollars. I just don't know if the Browns, if you already have a bunch of money in Joe Thomas, you have a first-round pick in Cam Irving, you have a second-round pick in Joel Bitonio, if they want to invest more money or that much money in a guy like Mitchell Schwartz. But to me, this team has so many needs that you can't create another one by letting your right tackle go. I know they don't have control over Alex Mack, but they can control Mitchell Schwartz by paying him what the market would pay him. And I think it would be a good move because he's a good locker room guy, and I think he's better than people give him credit.
We're talking this morning to Scott Petrick of the Chronicle-Telegram. When you're looking at yesterday's game, forget about the score, I guess, if that's possible. What are some of the positive things that sort of can be built upon from yesterday?
That's a good question. I think you have to start with Johnny, just because that's the biggest thing we need to see over these last three, four games. Now there's two left, but Hewlett started the last four. Did some good things. I think you continue to see a progression from him on the field. Obviously, he didn't put up a ton of points. Hurt by a few drops. Moved the ball relatively consistently. I think Johnny's playing like a guy that you say, okay, we need to see more of him, and that's a good thing. The only issues with that are, number one, you don't know if you can trust him off the field, and that will be a huge thing for the Browns to consider. Whoever's running the Browns next year, whoever the GM, president, whatever it is, whoever's doing that in the offseason has to decide if they can trust Johnny to be their starter moving forward. And number two, if the Browns have a top three draft pick, which certainly looks like they will, then you have a chance to take maybe the top quarterback in the draft, and that's where you have to weigh the new guy versus Johnny and versus all Johnny's issues. If you were drafting 25 and Johnny was fine off the field, then I think you go ahead and say, okay, we've seen enough from Johnny that we want to see more. But there's a couple big ifs involving Johnny, and we're not going to know how that plays out until we get deep into the offseason, maybe until we get all the way up to the draft.
I was watching yesterday Duke Johnson. His effort, I'm impressed with that. I mean, he always seems to be trying to get extra yards, do whatever he can. And sometimes it's results are different, but it's an attitude that I think is a positive on his part.
Yeah, you know what? Duke has shown some things this year. He's been a really good receiver out of the backfield. I remember a catch he made in San Diego that it looked like a receiver. Kind of catching the ball over his shoulder and getting his feet in bounds and pretty good coverage. I'm still a little confused about how the Browns have used him, how coordinator John DeFilippo has used him. We don't see him get a ton of carries. They use him on third down, and I think part of that is because he's not the biggest guy in the world. So, they don't want him to absorb too many hits, which is fine, and he can be that change of pace guy, but it means that he's probably never going to be your number one back, your feature back. So either Isaiah Correll has to continue to improve. He showed a little bit yesterday. He showed a lot against San Francisco. Or you got to find another guy to go with Duke, because it looks like the Browns are kind of wary about giving him, let's say, 25 touches a game. I think they're more comfortable giving him about 13 touches between handoffs and catching the ball out of the backfield.
Scott, every time Duke Johnson gets tackled, it seems like he's jawing with the defender. Not in a bad way, almost like in a jovial sort of way. Do you have any idea what they're talking about?
I don't. You never know if a guy is, ripping the other guy or they know each other and they're laughing. You see that when Johnny got sacked, he got up and he got up and was talking to the other guy. It just depends on your personality. Some guys have a big edge to them, and that rubs the opponents the other way. Some guys are just, kind of friendly guys that talk no matter what. So I'll have to ask Duke exactly what he's saying out there.
Do we know what Charles Gaines and Dante Whitner were saying to each other when they ended up pushing?
Yeah, I think Dante was not pleased with something Gaines did, and Gaines was not pleased that Dante brought it up. I think after the game they tried to downplay it. That stuff happens when the cameras catch it, and it's a rookie and a veteran, it doesn't look great.
A lot of though, you resolve it. I mean, it's sort of like an issue of the moment because obviously it's a very emotional game, and if there's something that's bothering, you get it out of the way, and you just, like men, we just move on. It's not like, I don't want to say this, we're not like women sometimes who stew over it a lot. We just kind of deal with it and then move on and it becomes no big deal.
Yeah, my guess is the media will make a bigger deal out of it than the actual players will.
Of course, you've got another, what are you going to talk about Kansas City for 5-6 days now as we get ready for a game in Kansas City with a team that's,
they're hot.
And so
they're red hot.
What do we expect?
Kansas City's, they won 8 in a row. I think they're the first team ever to win 8 in a row when they've already had 5 losses. They were 1-5, I think. Obviously playing great. Quarterback Alex Smith is one of those guys that gets so much grief, and he hasn't done well in the postseason, but he's a steady player. You know, Andy Reid went and got him as soon as he got to Kansas City, and he helped turn that franchise around. He might have thrown an interception yesterday, but he had gone games without throwing an interception. Really good with the ball. He's a good athlete. He can run when he gets outside the pocket. And they have a pass rush. They're missing one of their best pass rushers in Justin Houston. But they had Kamba Ali. You had a rookie corner who kept intercepting balls yesterday. They run the ball even though they lost their best running back. And that place gets loud. Seattle gets loud. Kansas City gets loud. It'll be another good test for this offense. And Johnny Manziel, see if he can continue to make strides. I think yesterday was a baby step. But if he can go into Kansas City and put up some points against that defense in that environment, it would be a good sign. You know, you're kind of waiting to see if the bottom falls out. It's just one game where the offense and Johnny just implode and there's a bunch of mistakes and turnovers. Hasn't happened in a while. You know, he's kind of had three good starts in a row, comparatively speaking. And it'd be really nice to see him continue that for the last 2 weeks.
Well, the last 2 weeks are against two big opponents hoping to get into the playoffs. So it's one of those modes where you're either going to run into a buzzsaw or you're going to catch somebody just a little off guard. We'll find out what happens in the next 2 weeks. Scott, we appreciate your time. We'll talk with you again next Monday. Appreciate it.
Okay. Thanks, guys.
Scott Petrak at the Chronicle Telegram. You can, of course, read him in the Chronicle Telegram or at Scott Petrak on Twitter.